statement of Shammai. We did last week, we did a Seder Rosh HaKeva, right? Now we're up to Emor Ma'at Vasei Harbei. Emor Ma'at Vasei Harbei. Avram was Emor Ma'at Vasei Harbei, but the reason over there was very simple. Why he said he only said he's going to do a little, because he wanted to influence them to stay, so he didn't want to make them feel that he's if he tells them he's going to do a lot for them, he'll stay, it'll be a long stay, so then they might not want to stay. So that's why he told them, he said, look, he said, just take a piece of bread and just a small drink, and you just wanted to get them, really, to induce them to stay. Then once they stayed already, so he gave them more. So there was really a practical reason for it. He was afraid they might refuse him. He's going to feel it's in a position. You see? So, what kind of a proof is that from Avram? I mean, Emor Ma'at Vasei Harbei. Ma'at Vasei Harbei. So there's a reason why he did that. But sometimes, it's you have a different situation. You have a situation where somebody's in trouble, so you tell them you're going to help them. Take a look at the Rabbeinu Yonasan. What does it mean, Emor Ma'at? Kishetavtiach es chavercho lasos bavuro shum dovar. So what does it mean? It means we want to assure your friend that you're going to do something for him, so only tell him a little bit. Only speak in very small terms. And then, when it comes around to doing, you should really help him much more than you said. And then he says, we learned this from Avram. V'chafas lachem. V'yikachem avacholov. Okay, so on the contrary, your friend's in trouble, so there you want to tell your telling him to do a lot. No, don't worry, I'll take care of it. I'll pay the mortgage for you, I'll take care of your house, take care of your car, don't worry about it. Tell him a lot, on the contrary. What's wrong with that?
Might not do it.
What? More harbe vasei harbe. Shouldn't be a more harbe vasei ma'at. I mean, of course, they understand not advisable. But why not tell them exactly what you're going to do? They said on the contrary. But people see that you give, so then it induces them to give. So this is a good thing. Right. That's a good observation, though. So, Reuven mentioned this, that it's only by chesed that this is mentioned. Not about anything else. Don't say I'm going to learn 100 blot and then learn 5 blot. You know what I mean? It's only by chesed that this is mentioned. Only when you do somebody a favor. Why only in that area? Is that more ma'at vasei habe? Rashi says right away, Rashi says, Emma ma'at vasei habe lasos doka ma'at. Mention right away it's doka. Not just by anything. It goes on like this. The Rambam mentions the same as this, as we have so far, but he goes on to say, he brings from Avram, then he goes on to say, Urashoyim Omrim Harbe Vafilum Ma'at Tena Mosen. He says, the wicked talk much, and they don't even do a little bit. Ke Ephron. Just like Ephron Achiti. When he gave the land to, he said he'd give the land to Avram. Shenosen Akol B'dvarav. He gave everything with his words. Ubamaisa lo iniach afilu prutachas min adomen. But actually, he didn't he didn't give Avram one penny cheaper. Yeah. The perfection and imperfection that we're being concerned with over here. What is the pshat? See, pshat is like this. That let's understand first, before we go back to Avram, let's understand first what the imperfection is of harbe vasei ma'at, like by Ephraim. Why is it that the Rishonim, the wicked, speak much, and the Tzaddikim don't talk much? Why is that so? Russian at tzaddik. When we say Russia over here, you mustn't imagine a wicked, vicious person. Because such people, first of all, hardly exist. And secondly, in reality, a Russia is not a person that you imagine in your mind that has all these wicked attributes. Just slightly different. Slightly different. A Russia doesn't walk around with an appearance of wickedness. The difference between the tzaddik and the Russia boils down to one thing. It boils down to whether a Russia also. There are different types of Roshoya, different types of Roshoya, different levels. But we're talking about a certain type of Russia over here. The Russia we're talking about over here is not a Russia that has no value system. That has no value system. Because were it a Russia that has no value system, so he wouldn't even say about doing good. Why should he, Ephron, after all, when you read the Psukim, you feel like Ephron wasn't such a bad person. A nice fella, right? Came running out over there, it's a Rashi, they criticize him over there. You feel a little bit, maybe it's unjust, you know? He would have done something for him. Shmaino Adoni, Nisu Levatab Besochenu, Benucham Mifras Kororeno, Kvoros Mesecho. That was Bnei Ches, right? Right? Alright, he had good intentions, nice fella. He volunteered, right? Why did they make him to such a Russia? The answer is that, like I said, Russia doesn't mean a person over here that has no value system. Wicked person, the person believes in evil. Very few people like that. Russia over here means an individual who basically abides by the ethical system. There's only one difference between him and between the tzaddik. The difference is that to him, the ethical system is only an apparent system. See? Whereas to the tzaddik, it's a real system. What's the pshat? It's an apparent system. It means that everything is measured by the way human beings look at it. That's the apparent system. He believes in ethics. But at the bottom line, in the back of his mind, the bottom line is always how people, the reality is in terms of how people look at it. That's the bottom line reality. See? So, there you see, whereas to the tzaddik, the way people look at it plays no role whatsoever. The good, chesed, the good, is good because in reality it's good. There's no he doesn't have in the back of his mind anybody observing him, you see, when he's doing the chesed. Whereas the Russian, in the back of his mind, there's always an observer. There's always an observer. The observer is in a human form, a human observer. Without the human observer is the final determinant of the good. He's always involved mentally in the good. It's not the good is really a good per se. So, yeah. So therefore, really, the Russia seeks not so much he doesn't run so much for the action per se, but he runs to satisfy the apparent reality in his mind. You see? Now, to satisfy the apparent reality in his mind, he immediately starts verbalizing, because since he's drawn, he wants to he's drawn to the satisfaction of this desire. It's a desire. He has a desire. Well, I want you to understand. The Russia has a desire. Ephron wasn't a liar. He really had the desire to do it. There was no question about it. The man wasn't a fool. The man lived among these people. He was a respected individual. So this was a society that they lived in. It seemed to be an honorable society. So so Ephron was a respected person. He was an individual who wasn't a fool. He didn't. He couldn't be a person who just said lies, and he would have gone through with it. But the question is, what was drawing him? What drew him? What drew him? Well, what draws the individual? What drew Ephron was one thing. What drew Ephron was the desire to satisfy the people. The desire to satisfy, in his mind, the apparent reality, which is formed by humanity. How humanity looks at it is ultimately the bottom line of reality for Ephron. You see? Now, that's why, immediately, since he wants humanity to look at him in a certain way, so immediately he says how much he's going to do. That satisfies that desire. Right, trust and conform to right away. See, right away. Okay? One thing, that this individual should have the goods that he's that he wants him to have. That's all he's interested in. See? There is no reflection in terms of, the reality is only in terms of this individual. See? This is the good, that this individual, I should make sure that this individual has this thing, this is the good. That's all it has nothing to do with, there is no images in his mind that he's trying to satisfy. See? The rush is trying to satisfy, doesn't necessarily have to be always public. You mentioned it's public. It's true, by effort it's public. But it doesn't have to be public, it can be privately too. The person can have in the back of his mind, it's always how people would look at this thing. So the people, how people look at it in the back of his mind is always determines the underlying reality of the situation. That's what I meant by the rush is attracted to an apparent good. That's what I mean by an apparent good. You understand what I mean? But the Russia, we're not talking about a Russia has no value system. He has a value system. But he's attached to the apparent good. He's not attached to the real good. Now, the apparent good desires, since he's attached to the apparent good, he wants to satisfy it. So immediately, he's drawn to enunciate and to verbalize, because that's where he gets that satisfaction. Since he's trying to satisfy, in the back of his mind, he's trying to satisfy what people, or what he thinks people think of him. That really is the bottom line. So he immediately, he has an opportunity now to show them what he's going to do. He has to talk. It's instinctive. Why? Chesed only. Why by chesed? Let's answer the next problem we ask. Why by chesed only? Why only by chesed? Why not by anything else? And more matzah se'arbe. See? Let's duck and chesed, that this is the area wherein this emotion really lies, centrally. Kishetavtiach es chavercha, Rabbeinu Yonah says. What's the pshat? The pshat is, you see, this desire for the desire for the respect of people. See, the desire for the respect of people expresses itself in the situation which would lend itself most to that desire. Which situation lends itself most to that desire? When another individual is dependent on you. See? That's the situation which lends itself most to that desire. The area where this emotion is most expressed, most easily expressed, is when another individual needs your help. When you are the one that is going to express your generosity towards somebody else. He's dependent on you. You see? And in that situation, that gives you the greatest opportunity to be elevated in his eyes to the greatest degree, and into the eyes of people. The reason why you're elevated by the other people is simply because the other people identify with them also. Most powerful emotion. So the most powerful emotion is where somebody else's life is in your hands and you help them. That's the most powerful emotion. Then you become the... that's the opportunity for the individual to achieve greatness in somebody's eyes. That is the opportunity. You see, that's why you see in philanthropism, you have that same thing. Everybody always jokes about the fact that people, make tremendous pledges, but when it comes to collecting, not that easy. Why? What's the reason? What's the reason? Very simple. Exactly. See, now we'll answer the other question. The question was like this. The question was, why is it that the Rush is the reverse? Why is the Rush, he says, he's Omrim Harbe and he's Osamat? Right? I mean, well, why does he do Mat, really? Why does he do Mat? What's the answer? The answer is, since the Russia really is just basically, he's after satisfying one thing. He's after satisfying that emotion. Now, the moment the man has given his pledge, has spoken, and people believe him, because they know that he's like Ephron, he's a respectable person, and they believe him. He already had his satisfaction. That's it. Well, that's basically what he's after. Now comes the very difficult task of doing an action for which there is very little satisfaction related to it. You see? He finds this great difficulty. And it doesn't mean that Ephron would not have done it. From Ephron, yes, he would have been forced to do it because he'd have no choice because he would have been embarrassed. But any way that he could sneak out of it and save his face, he will take that opportunity. There's no question about it. Which is exactly what he did. Because there is no real satisfaction associated to the actual action. It's only to a reflection of the action. What will the image which it casts among others. And that's what he's really after. And that's why he's drawn to speak. And once he spoke already, there's not too much left to enjoy. He basically had the enjoyment. Yes. He has to give enough to maintain his credibility. That's a very good formulation. Exactly. That's all. To maintain his credibility. The Russia himself is not... I want you to know, the Russia isn't aware of this. It's not something that's calculated. Not something that's calculated. Because if it was calculated, then Ephron would be a different kind of a Russian. See, the Torah doesn't say that. The Torah doesn't say that Ephron was a liar. He wouldn't be a liar anyways. Why should he take a chance? Maybe he'll be caught in a position where he'll really have to pay up. You see? No, he himself, he really believed that he was a good person. The Russia is not a person who views himself as wicked. He just simply, he doesn't know, he has no knowledge of himself. He just lacks the knowledge concerning himself. And he's being fooled by these emotions, and he thinks that he's a very great guy. He really thinks he's a tzaddik. He thinks he's a very ethical and very moral individual. See? See, the tzaddik, we have to understand, he has a different framework. To him, the good is in the action, in the deed. He's related. He doesn't have any enjoyment in discussing it. His enjoyment is purely related to the deed, because this he considers to be truly good. And he considers it to be a good for himself and a good for the one that he's benefiting. So he really is attracted to the action. He's attracted to the performance, you see. But the speech is only used as a means to reach that performance. Because really there's no reason to talk about it at all. Since his only interest is in the deed itself, so there's no reason to verbalize. So why does he speak about it? Only insofar as it's necessary, you see, to bring about the deed itself. It's only a means for the deed. Now, what Chazal say is simply that if a person's speech really only served that function, to bring about the deed, he would speak very little and he would do a lot. That's the way the result would be. See, that's the reality of the situation. See? And they cite the case of Avram, because by Avram, that's precisely where you see that the speech was only used as a means of bringing about the deed, nothing else, you see? And that's why, in his specific situation, he only spoke what was necessary to bring about the situation so that he can accomplish what he wanted. There wasn't one extra word, you see? That's the reason why they bring a riot from Avram. The fact is that in reality, if your speech is only a means to bring about the deed, you'll find that it will be very little, and the deed will exceed the speech by a very great amount. Not to say, however, that there are certain situations you can't. Somebody, the question was raised before. What about a situation where you do have to speak? No, you're right. I mean, that is correct. That is for the deed. That is for the deed. If that is the only emotional impact, you see, that's all that he really enjoys, then fine. But generally speaking, it'll be much less. Situation warrants that the man needs encouragement. You should speak to him. So then that's part of the deed. Then you should do it. Right. Absolutely. Second shot in the Rabbeinu Yonah. He mentions Sadi Yagoyin. He says, "In laftiyah chazavoseinu b'shtei osios osolam kamanisu naflos." If the first Gula, which is Gula's Mitzrayim. God only mentioned two letters, and you see how great that Gula was. Gula Asida Lavo Shenichtavu Kama Dafin V'Kama Kundrisin V'Kama Svarim Me'Avtochos V'Kama Nechomos B'Yirmiya B'Nevi'im Alachas Kama V'Chama Ki Niflo'im Yiyu Ma'asov Mima She'Evtiach. He says a person should know and should think about it. Velosei says libo ki socher godel yielo mitnei avtochas. Unbelievable thing. That a person should think in his mind and should know that he will get a tremendous reward because of these promises that God made in the framework of the Geula Hasida. Funny thing. The question is, why should a person think that he's going to have a tremendous reward over here? First of all, we always say that you shouldn't do things for a reward. So why should I think to myself there's going to be such a tremendous reward? The answer is that what Sadia Goyen said was that a person doesn't necessarily know, usually does not know. When we're talking about an individual, doesn't really know and perceive what the good is. Doesn't know and doesn't perceive exactly what the good is. But a person should know what the nature of the good is, the quantitatively, that there is really in man a fantastic, untapped resource, which if it was really tapped, could improve his happiness unbelievably. See? Could improve his happiness unbelievably. Really, the truth of the matter is that why is it so that the first Gula's Mitzrayim was fantastic, right? But it says Gula C is going to be so much more fantastic. What does it mean, so much more fantastic? In what way will it be so much more fantastic? I mean, what? More Nisim? Bigger Nisim? Doesn't say anywhere that the Nisim is bigger. The difference will be in terms of the benefits derived. You see, the first Gula's Mitzrayim was an external victory. So it was a fantastic thing, the Nisan. But it was a victory over Mitzrayim. And of course there was Matan Torah. But the Gula Asida will be a situation where man will be able to really enjoy, partake of total happiness, because they'll be able to live properly. It will be an internal conquest. See, it will be an internal conquest. And that will supersede everything. Because then when man will realize the happiness that he attains from perfecting himself internally, and what kind of a life he will have, he'll look at an external conquest as nothing. That's why the Pasuk says over there, Pasuk says, a day will come when you won't say, Hashem HaShem says, Yisrael Meretz Mitzrayim. See? Why? What does it mean? I mean, why does she forget such a thing? It would be so much quantity, such a bigger nisim. I mean, so even a little bigger. So this wasn't big. I mean, you're going to forget this. The pshat is, there's only one thing that could supersede the nisim in Mitzrayim, the conquest of the internal man, where man will be able to tap the resources of his internal self and achieve a state of happiness that he will recognize, and he'll be able to see that all the external conquests are all nothing. No matter how great they are, it doesn't mean a thing. Because still, the state of imperfection that he was at was so prohibitive in terms of his having happiness. No matter what the conquests externally were, he really couldn't make that much of a change. But the change of how to live properly and how to use man's internal resources in the right way so that man can achieve tremendous, man is capable of tremendous happiness. Just like you see people on the whole are miserable, that's how you know. The misery is a frustration, really. But if they would be able to use their energies properly, they would be, on the contrary, they'd be tremendously happy. Because man is a creature that's capable of tremendous happiness. That's why if he doesn't receive it, so he's tremendously miserable. But the question is, this Gula Asida is supposed to be from the different Golis. And there are Rishonim that say, what is the Golis that we're in now? So people look historically into, everybody likes to be a mystic. So they look into Daniel, and they see the four kingdoms over there, and they try to figure out, and that's why, as a matter of fact, with the Ramban, when they argue with Ramban, so the king argue with Ramban, he says, you look at it, you know, it's too long already. It's too long already, the Golis. You see, the original Golis was 70 years, the first Golis. You're going to tell me that the exile keeps going hundreds, centuries and centuries and centuries? Yeah, but there's one thing, you see. There's a difference between the nature of the original Golis and the nature of our Golis. And there are those that say the Golis that we are in is the Christian Golis. See, the Golis of Christianity. But this Golis isn't just a physical Golis. See? It's a Golis where our ideas are warped. And that's a different kind of Golis. And that's why the Geula is a different kind of Geula. Different kind of thing. So that's what Sadie Goyen says, that a person should know that he will have a tremendous good when this Golis is over. He'll receive a tremendous good. Why? Not that he should look forward to the good, but it has to do with the recognition of man's nature. And once he recognizes something about the good, this will drive him more towards the good. Because knowledge of the good, even if it's only knowledge in terms of quantitative knowledge, but this knowledge will help him to cause him to go and to be driven towards the good. Okay. As this time with the Amor Madva Sehabe, so you tell me it's a Mahu Afata. Mahu Afata means that we imitate God. So I mean, so what is it? Why should... Right, I mean, why do we... I can understand we imitate God if we understand the perfection and the nature of his action, so we imitate him. But what does that have to do with this? It's a very nice idea. Very thankful that he brought it down. But what does that have to do with the pshat of Emor Matva Sehabe? It seems to be another pshat, this Emor Matva Sehabe. It seems to be a different thing. Something altogether. It's really difficult to say why it's a separate pshat. Oh, look, we can't understand everything. Leave it go. We don't understand it. What? Kabel es kol odom besever ponim yafos. All right, you should receive everybody in a congenial way. The save upon him, Yafos.
Happy face.
The happy face, right. Okay. What is this? This is a third part. This is the third ethic. Hu sheyiso v'yitein im abrios benachas. The Rambam says that the Rashi is not Rashi, is it? The Rambam says, sheyiso im benachas means calmly, he should do business with them in a very calm way. Ubidvorim arevim uretsuyim, and his words should be sweet and be acceptable. That's what the Rambam says. Okay, that when a person does business, he should do it in a calm way, and he should always seem very friendly and very congenial. They should show them the different one pshat. The different pshat. The Rambam's pshat is more like the second pshat of the Rabbeinu Yonah. First pshat Rabbeinu Yonah says is shiyir lam panim shel simcha. He should look like he's happy all the time. Kedei shitei ruach habrias nochei menu, so that they should like him, because people like somebody that's happy. People don't like somebody that's a grouch. Yeah, every time you talk to them, they always complain. See, I like that. So be happy. If you're happy, so people will like you. Okay, that's the first pshat. And in the Kabbalah's Kaladim, the Seir Panim Yafos means that you should act in a way that people will befriend you, they'll like you, because it'll be beneficial for you. Okay, yeah, Shetahei Ruach Habrias Nochem. So people will be friendly to you, people will like you, and you'll have a more pleasant life. People are friendly to you, you have less arguments, they'll do things for you, is there less strife and less stress. That's all, you'll have less stress this way. Pila Shacher, and here the Rabbeinu Yonah says a deeper pshat. Vevi Makabeli says, She is rachek mi midas hakas, that a person should remove himself from the characteristic of anger. Shehim mi doro ad ma'od, because this is a terrible characteristic. V'inai gatzma b'midas haratzon, and the man should always act according to a in a very pleasing, gentle way. Al derech shi yimirutzim imenu b'nei adam. Noe omekubelas. Okay, something that's acceptable and that is acceptable and pleasant, right. Valzamer chazal b'derech musa. Ovim rabin v'yishma nafsho minizokin shol b'nei adam. So he says like this. He says that you should be mafir al midosov. What does it mean, mafir al midosov? It means that you should overlook your own desires for theirs. And your own will, you should give up your own will for theirs. And this way you'll have many friends. No doubt about that. And you will... And you'll protect yourself from the harm of other human beings, because a person who shows them anger, they will want to people want to harm him. That's what he says. Oh, there's a lot of, he says a lot here. Okay, let's take the first part. What? Getting rid of chaos. It's an interesting thing. I mean, of course, if you mavatel your rutzin for their rutzin, and you do everything they want, and you give up whatever you want, naturally you'll have a lot of friends. I mean, I don't know if it's worthwhile to have such friends, but you'll have them. That's the, what's the big chiddush here? What's so beneficial? I mean, why is that such a benefit? Just to be popular? You can understand if he's running for office, maybe. But in a private life, well, what does he care? Okay. That's one question. Well, let's understand, really, in the first part he says, she is rachek mi midas hakas. Shehimi the rod ma'od. What does it have to do with midas hakas? What does it have to do? What is it talking about midas hakas? It says having mekabelos kol adam b'sefer panim yafos. What does it mean? You should keep away from midas hakas. What's midas hakas have to do with it? Midas hakas means a person loses his temper. Happens once in a yevo. I mean, what does it have to do with? We're talking about a constant situation. Having mekabel kol adam b'sefer panim yafos means whenever you're talking to people, general situation. Not talking about losing your temper, about anger. So what does he mention over here that you should get rid of the chaos, midas hakas? Midas hakas, a person gets angry once in a while. A person, you know anybody that's always losing his temper every minute of his time, I mean, he'd be crazy, it wouldn't be normal. What he's saying is, Arbenion is saying like this, that why is it that people aren't pleasant to one another? You meet somebody in the street. Why aren't you pleasant to the person? Hello, how are you doing? Be friendly. Why aren't people that way? Saying, hello, how you doing? Why is that? What's the reason? The main reason, Rabbi Niona says, is because the person is constantly angry. There's an undercurrent, a constant undercurrent of anger. See? That's what he says, v'yishrachek mi'midas hakas. That's the midas hakas. When a person gets angry at somebody, somebody comes into his house and the child does something and loses his temper. Why did he lose his temper? I guarantee you, it's not because of the event that occurred. It has nothing to do with the event. The event is an opportunity for him to vent his own frustrations. See? He's really angry before. He was angry before he got home. When he got home, something happened. He had an excuse to let out the tremendous anger that he was holding in all the time. But basically, the person is constantly in a state of anger. He always has the anger inside, but he's also using energy to control it. Okay? And the first opportunity that he has to express it, okay? First opportunity, he's waiting for that opportunity. The first opportunity, all the anger comes out. But that anger that comes out is not the anger about the situation. It's an internal anger. It's an anger that has to do with himself. More than the situation. That's midas hakas. That's midas hakas. Pasuk in Kehelas. Pasuk in Kehelas is the last pasuk in Perek Gedalah. V'hoser kas mili becha, v'haver ro'o mibsorecha. What does it mean? Hoser kas mili becha, v'haver ro'o mibsorecha. he's like this. What is this anger? What is this anger really, this constant anger? What is the cause of this constant anger? The cause of this constant anger is that a person is dissatisfied with reality, the state. See, reality is not conforming to his wishes. That's the cause of the anger. That's why he's in a constant state of frustration. The frustration is because things aren't going the way he really wants them to. He doesn't even enunciate it. He doesn't necessarily verbalize it. See? But he, somehow or other, there is something there. There is something that he might not even want to think about it. Because he might realize that if he thought about it, he'd see it's absurd. But nevertheless, his desires, he has absurd desires. These absurd desires are not being satisfied. Reality is not the way he wants it. And that's why he's angry. See? He's angry at reality. And when he sees people, when he meets people, this anger is obvious. Because he takes it out on any individual that he can. He feels, somehow or other, in a strange way, that everybody's to blame for his dissatisfaction with life. His dissatisfaction with life. So the thing is like this. So, Hoser kas mi libecha. So that's what the pasuk says. That's what Shlomo Melech says. Hoser kas mi libecha. Remove the anger from your heart. V'hoser ra mibsarecha. Why does he say v'hoser ra mibsarecha? Take away an evil from your flesh, because it's something which ruins the individual. It's a raw that destroys the individual. Destroys him. Haser raw mitzarecha. It's just as if he'd be destroying his flesh with this emotion. What is the solution? What is the solution? Of course, solution can't be just given just like that. But the solution is, where the failure of the individual is, because he does not wish to accept. Basically, the failure is that he does not wish to accept reality. Not reality the way it exists externally, and not his internal reality. He cannot face the reality, not of himself and not of the world around him. And because of that, he's in a constant state of anger, constant state of frustration. So anybody he sees, he lets it out on that. See? The end of the pasuk is ki hayaldus v'hashachris havel. What does it got to do with yaldus and shachris? Yaldus means the early days of a person's life. Ki hayaldus v'hashachris havel. So Shlomo says havel, shachris. Shachris is the dark. When you're young, you're considered black because you don't have the knowledge yet. Knowledge is light. Opens up your eyes. Yaldus is the early years. The early years yimei hashachris v'hayaldus. Those years are havel, are nonsensical. What is Shlomo telling us? What is Shlomo telling us? He says, because he's still tied. He's still tied, inextricably, to the infantile desires. See? Yaldas v'ashachras havel, he says. So that's what that's what Shlomo Melech tells us. He says, if you want to have a good life, he says, "Haser kas mi libecha, haser ra mitzarecha." You should remove these attachments, nonsensical attachments and frustrations, because it's something that eats up the flesh. You see, and ki hayaldus v'hashachris hevel. That's all nonsensical. It's not real. It's hevel. It doesn't exist in reality. Come in line with reality, and then you'll be able to enjoy life. Then you'll be able to relax and remove the kas, remove the frustration. And if you succeed in doing that internally, then you'll be mekabel kol adam b'sever panim yafas. You'll be very happy to greet another individual. Why not? He's another human being. Be very friendly to the person. There's no reason not to. The reason why people aren't friendly is because of an internal frustration. That's what it is. He's not angry. He didn't lose. Yeah, person, the Rambam says, a chacham demonstrates anger at the right time. It doesn't mean internally he's really angry. He just demonstrates. That's a chacham. Right. That chacham, a person that demonstrates anger at the proper time, is the individual who's in line with reality. He knows reality dictates at this time that there should be a demonstration of anger. But internally, he's never lost his mind. That's the important thing. He never has lost his contact with reality. Whereas an individual who loses his temper, he's not in line with reality anymore. That moment, he's completely in line with his infantile emotions. Exactly. last piece of Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah says that you should give in to other people, and you should be mevatel your enjoyments, your ratzon, your desires for their desires, and your chafetzim for their chafetzim. So we ask, so what kind of a friend is that? Who needs a friend like that? That I should be the sucker? I am? What's the answer? The answer is very simple. The answer is that itself is the infantile emotion. Truth of the matter is, when you see the fights that most people have, the arguments that they have, and you look at that which they're arguing about, you see how silly and nonsensical it is. Why are they arguing, really? It's not the little, this one got a little bigger portion, the other one got a little smaller. I mean, what's the big deal? Hey, that wasn't fair. We didn't divide it up fair. What difference does it really make in terms of the framework of the individual's happiness, where they got a little less or a little more? They see that's enough to cause tremendous arguments, tremendous battles. Why? Because these people are tied to the infantile desires. See? And that's why you'll notice the people usually say, believe me, it's not that, it's not the thing itself. It's the principle behind it. See? What is the great principle, the great ethic that this individual is so concerned about? I'm not going to be a sucker for him. You see? What is that? It's an emotion. It's the emotion of... He's simply tied to a certain egoistic emotion. It's not the thing itself. So that's why Rabbeinu Yonah says that a real chacham doesn't care. Real chacham doesn't care. So what if he has this little? Give it to him. Let him. What do you care? Does it really make a difference? Emotionally, it's an unbelievable thing. But in reality, it doesn't mean anything. A chacham doesn't care. So the other guy thinks that I'm a fool. He's not going to think that I'm an idiot. See? That's what they're concerned about. What do you care? What do you care what he thinks? It's childish. Child doesn't mean anything. It's nonsensical. On the contrary, if you give this up, which is a nothing, which is only a fantasy of your own mind, an infantile fantasy, you'd make a tremendous friend, and this person would be of tremendous benefit to you later. That's the way a chacham should live. See? Right. The little thing doesn't mean anything. You would have a better life yourself. You wouldn't have the strife and the anxiety. Bihasakas mi lebecha. You'd have a good life. And you'd have the friends, too. You see? The nonsensical things that people fight over are only rooted in infantile causes. Ki hayaldus vashachras havel. These are all nonsensical things. So if you'd give up this little nothing, this little nonsensical thing, and you'd have a mature mind, a mature attitude, on the contrary, you'd be better off, you'd have better friends, and you'd improve the lot of mankind in general, and you'd improve your own situation. You'd be in a better situation yourself. That's having mekabel kolodim meseva panim yafos. Having mekabel kolodim meseva panim yafos really means that a person should be a mature individual, live in reality. That's what it means. That's the basic idea. Not only that, he says, how many people in life are harmed because they get into these petty arguments, and because of that they develop tremendous animosities, tremendous hatreds, and because of this people are out to get them, and they do get them. I mean, let's face it. Yeah, sure, because when people band together against this another individual, I mean, they might not get you today, but they certainly, there's certainly a possibility. A person, enemy is not a good thing to have. Only a fool thinks that he's impervious to any assault. It's foolish. So that's what Rabbeinu Yonah says. You get out of this, having mekabel koladim b'sever panim yafos is a very big midah, very big thing. Because really what it requires is a whole overhaul of a person's infantile emotions and to live in a mature way, mature level. This is going to be a frustrating situation if I'm friendly to everybody. I mean, I'll be pent up all day. Like people say, look, all day I'm pent up in the office. I come home, I have to learn to let out my frustrations. You see? That's true. Then this would be a terrible thing. A person that goes around all day, he's smiling, when he's inside, he's miserable. That wouldn't be too good. He might benefit practically from it, but himself he won't. That's why Rabbeinu Yonah says that the only way to do it is to really make him change the personality, make him overhaul the personality. That's the only way to do it. Okay. There's only one more question we have to deal with this memory. There's three things. How do these three things tie in? One is Asei Taroscha Shamay Omer. Shamay is 3 points. Asei Taroscha Keva, that's one. two, and more matvasei harbe, and three, heavy mekabel askala adam b'seva panim yafos. How do these three things tie in together? What is this combination?
Two bottom ones, right?
You see from this that Chazal didn't know that Torah is enough. Torah is enough by itself. I say Torah Sakeva. See? Right. Knowledge is very important to have the knowledge. We'll mention many times that the knowledge itself will not necessarily really be the person's salvation if it's not related to him in a specific way. It's not related to him in a specific way. Like last week we were talking about the idea of the different stages of life, and how each stage has something that must be done. Life isn't just made haphazardly. But the reason why a person has his youth and his prime, and then he gets older, and the whole system—it's a system. It's a system of perfection. So we said that for the mind, the strongest intellectual breakthroughs are made when a person's younger. You see that from all the scientific breakthroughs. But nevertheless, we said when a person gets older, he really reaches perfection. Why? Because then the knowledge becomes a part of him. That's why it says really zaken. The Torah says in your respect to zaken. Zaken, of course, zaken means a person's esher kana chachma. It's true, but it also has an implication of an older person. It should seem that the knowledge has to become related to the individual in order for that's the person that you really respect. Right. So I say Torah Sakeva is one point is knowledge. That's one point. I say Torah Sakeva. The man must recognize the importance of knowledge. That's one. What are the other two? The three things are like this. First thing is knowledge. That goes without saying. Without knowledge, I mean, you have nothing. So a person must recognize the importance of knowledge, and he must be make this his most essential pursuit in life. That's number one. Two, second thing is that for the seeming good,
for the okay,
don't look for the apparent good. Don't look for the good that people think is the good. So you have to remove that from the back of your mind. You must look for that which is good, inherently, the real good. That's the second thing that a person must have. And the third thing that the person must have knowledge, he must recognize that he's looking for a real good, and there's one more thing he must have in order to have a good life. What's the next thing he must have? He must recognize that he has to make an adjustment on his personal desires so that they should conform with reality. That's the third thing. If he has those three things, then he has to be successful. Okay?
The Maimar Tezayin. Perek Aleph.
This is a very difficult Maimar. Difficult to just unravel and know what is meant by it. It says like this, Rav Gamliel Omer, Aseh lecha rav, v'estalek min hasafek. Make a Rebbe for yourself, a teacher, and remove yourself from doubt. V'al tarbe l'aser umodis. And you shouldn't be in the habit of taking miser by estimation. Okay? You see that there's trouble here. By that fact, truma a person can give more. Person give more truma than he's required. Chitachas pateres is a kri. Whatever you say is truma, it's truma. As long as you leave over something, so you'll have truma. But with regard to maisa, you can't, because maisa is 10%, and 10% has to be exactly 10%. So if a person should give more maisa than 10%, so what happens? So there's a problem. It's not miser, but it's more than just that it's not miser. Because really, miser, so say, so it's not miser.
So what if it's not Meiser?
So he has Meiser mixed in together with... yeah, that's the problem. So he has Meiser mixed in with Tevel. So he has Meiser mixed in with Tevel. Because Meiser really has no Kedusha. Meiser has no Kedusha. Meiser can be eaten by anybody, so it shouldn't be much of a problem. The only problem is that the Meiser, that which is mixed in with the Meiser, is Tevel. And Tevel you can't eat. So what happens is a person that, the reason why it's Tevel is because you didn't take Meiser from it. You take away this, you take away a certain quantity from Meiser. So that which remains is Mutter Bachila, that which remains, because you took away Meiser. But since you have more than 10% in what you took away, that extra beyond the 10%, you didn't take anything from it. So there's no, so it's Tevel. So it's Asa Bachila. That away with the Meiser, so you didn't take the Meiser away from it. So therefore, so it's Tevel mixed in with the Meiser. So the din is, well, the halacha is that his peros are okay and his Meiser's no good. Peros of Mesukonin or Meiseros of Mekukolin. That's the halacha. Okay. What this has to do with anything over here is what the problem is. Okay? Now, there isn't too much Rambam really on this. All the Rambam says is, which Rabbeinu Yonah also quotes, but Rabbeinu Yonah at least elaborates more and puts it into a framework. But the Rambam is very brief. The Rambam just says that Zeh Shetzivo Heino Lasos Rav, over here where it says you have to make yourself a Rebbe, Eino Linyan HaLimud. It doesn't mean that you should make yourself a Rebbe to gain knowledge from. That's not what it's referring to. They should have a Rebbe to gain knowledge from. Ava lahora, but it's speaking about Psak Halacha. Simlucha Rav, you should make for yourself a Rav, Shetismach Halav, that you should rely on him, the Isser V'Heter. The Stalik Atom Min HaSafek. And you should remove yourself from the Safek, from doubt. How does his last? Amram ben Yerushalmi, just like it says in the Yerushalmi, Zil Aisili Zakim Min HaShuk, the Esmach Halav. Go bring me a zakin from the shuk that I can rely on. Vashilach, and I'll make it mutter for you. Alright. Tziva. Sheyivrach me'atzoas ha'maisreis ba'omed ne'eshum and asfekis. Okay. And also, you should keep away from being making maisa, giving maisa that way, but giving maisa by estimation, because that's also a type of suffix. Totally. This is the approach. Both Rabbeinu Yonah and Aram take the same approach over here. Rabbeinu Yonah elaborates a little more. Rashi learns altogether differently. Rashi learns Aseilach HaRav really means, literally, Aseilach HaRav means you should learn by a Rebbe. That's what it means. Not with regard to Pesach, but it's with regard to Limud. See? In the Histalik Man HaSafik, Rashi says, Shin Tilmod Me'atzmacho Tarba Lachos Vegas. He says, because Rashi explains before, if you're going to learn yourself, you're going to have a lot of sfeikas. What does it mean you're going to have a lot of sfeikas? Rashi's not talking about a Rebbe for Svara. He's not talking about a Rebbe for Svara. He's talking about a Rebbe for Shmua. A Rebbe for the facts. Because that's the way Rashi explained before. He says, Kvar biyat ilil. See? Aseh lecha rav, shelo tehe ata lo med la'atzmacha mesvara. Element of rav, I mean a Shmua. That's what it means. According to Rashi over here, does not mean you should make yourself a Rebbe, so you should remove the sfeikas, theoretical sfeikas. He says, no, he says you should learn, you should go, or you should trouble yourself to learn from a Rebbe, even though it's difficult, and overcome the emotion of a person wants to be on his own. The emotion, a person wants to be on his own, wants to be independent. So he wants to be able to sit back and be able to just theorize, and he feels self-sufficient, independent. See? That emotion, he says, is a bad emotion. Aseilach HaRav is stalik min hasafek. Because if you're going to do that, you're going to have a lot of sfeikas. Why? Because there are many, many facts that you're not going to know. And you're just going to be theorizing. If you're theorizing, you don't have all the facts at your disposal. You're going to have many theoretical possibilities. So what the result is going to be, that you're going to have many sfeikas. And your whole learning is not going to be very accurate. See? And then your whole Torah will be laden with Sveikus, which is no good, of course. That's the way Rashi learns. Right, so what's the difference in this between Aseh L'Chorav and Aseh L'Chorav before? Because the thing is like this, before he meant Aseh L'Chorav, there's two things. We mentioned before, we said that it was that a person is presumptuous. A person assumes that he knows before looking at the facts. Right? So, like we mentioned, the ancients, they assumed that the certain things are so. And it was later discovered that you can't make any of these assumptions. That you have to really, the facts are very intricate, and you have to discover the facts first. So over here too, we said before, Zaseh L'Chorav means that a person shouldn't be presumptuous, because if he's presumptuous and he assumes things, he's going to make errors. But over here it's not saying, over here it's not saying that. Over here it's saying the Stalik Min HaSafek. The Stalik Min HaSafek means, even after a person, even if a person removes his presumptuousness, see, and he's very cautious and very careful to abide by the facts and have his theory constructed very close to the facts, what will happen is, if he doesn't have enough facts, he's going to have sveikus. In other words, actually, this really complements the member before. There's either one of two possibilities when a person does not have the ample facts at his disposal. Either he's presumptuous, and if he's presumptuous, he won't have any sveikus, but he'll have wrong conclusions, you see. Or else, if he's cautious, so then he'll have sveikus. He'll have many questions. So the one before, the member before, say, L'Chorav, according to Rashi, is referring to the fact that a person shouldn't be presumptuous in his thought. And this one over here is saying that even if you are not presumptuous and you don't have a Rebbe, so then you're going to have many sveikus. You have many doubts, see, which will also destroy your limud. Because a limud that's fraught with many doubts loses its whole structure. Everything's a suffix, so there's nothing that the mind can grasp for certain. Okay. All right. That's a good question. Another pshat shalotei kovei atzmacho ledvar halacha va'omed lovetach elakivan d'lav beferishu iboyle lemezel kamei rabbe. Rashi has another pshat like this, that a person should not paskin halachas and feel secure. A person should not feel secure in paskining his halachas elakivan d'lav beferishu, since that which he is poskening is not openly, is not something which is openly decided. It's not written anywheres. So he should go to his Rebbe and check with him as to whether his psak is right or not. Okay? Of course. First shot in Rashi and the second shot in Rashi. First shot in Rashi is that if you learn by yourself, you have many sveikas. Second shot in Rashi is that what? That since it's not preferred, so you have to go to your Rebbe. What's the difference in the first shot and the second shot? That is a further, is really a further advanced shot. Because you're saying, the first shot, you're saying that you have to go to your Rebbe to get the facts. Because otherwise, you're going to have many sveikas. You have many doubts. Because you don't know what the facts are. Right? That's the first shot. But according to the first shot, once you have all the facts, then you're on your own. You're on your own. Second shot is no. Second shot is even after you have the facts, now you want to make a decision in terms of shikla das as to which way the psak halacha goes, so you should go to your Rebbe. You shouldn't paskin by yourself. You shouldn't rely on your own psak. Second one's true, then you don't need the first one anymore. Certainly the first one's no good. Certainly you shouldn't develop everything. So the smallest question is that if I say that I must go to my Rebbe even for Shikul Adas, and if that pshat is correct, and assuming it's not a machlekes, so then certainly you have to go to your Rebbe for facts, to Kal V'Chomer. Right? So what's the difference between the first shot and the second shot? You're talking in the time of Chazal when it was Mipi Hashmor. Let's talk about that. Okay. Thanks, you don't need a Rebbe. You need a Rebbe for Svar. But this is not what he's talking about. The first Pshat and the second Pshat. Well, good. Okay, the answer is like this. That really, you see, we're talking about the same emotion over here. It's the emotion that a person wants to be independent. That's the basic emotion. He wants to feel self-sufficient. He doesn't want to feel that he needs anybody. He wants to feel freedom from his Rebbe. He wants to feel that he's on his own. Okay? That is the emotion that we're discussing over here. Now, this emotion basically has two expressions. There are two. You see, when we say, for instance, that you have to, you understand that when a person, when it says he asks his Rebbe, he has to ask his Rebbe when he's in doubt. It certainly doesn't mean, I mean, when he paskins, it doesn't mean where it's clear to him. Like you said before, it doesn't mean where it's clear to him that this is the psak. I mean, where it's clear 100%, even though it's not beferish, but where it's clear as day that this is the concept, then that's called beferish. And he knows this is the basic idea. It doesn't have it written out word for word. But he knows that there's no question about this, that this is the way the halacha is. That's a part of the basic concept of the very system. If he's discussing halacha and muktzah, he understands the concept of muktzah, for instance. And he knows, yes, it was muktzah, yeah, because that's the basic concept. Even if it's not mefurish written, every single case isn't written down. But he knows the basic concept. He knows that's it. It has to be that way. There's no sense to go ask his Rebbe. That's crazy. So when does he have to go to ask his Rebbe? He has to go to ask his Rebbe where it is a theoretical point, and in the back of his mind, he has some doubt about it. See? In the back of his mind, he has some doubt. So he isn't really sure 100%. That's what Rashi means. That's Lav Beferish. In such a case, he's pretty sure, I mean, which way he would paskin. He's convinced he's going to paskin this way. But still, in the back of his mind, there's some element of doubt. Since it's not really part of the very basic structure of the halacha that he's discussing, or that he's thinking about. Right? So there the Chazal say that if there's any element of doubt, that he has to go to his Rebbe. He has to go to his Rebbe. Now, why should a person not go to his Rebbe in such a situation? Actually, logic dictates that he should, even if you have a fraction of a doubt. He removes the suffix. Remove the suffix. Something that's talking about suffix. Remove the doubtful element. So the answer is because if a person has a desire to feel self-sufficient, and he doesn't want to feel he's dependent on his Rebbe. Right? So therefore, he goes into, he paskins by himself. This is wrong. This is wrong. Now, that's one expression. That's one way. So when a person... If a person wants to be self-sufficient, that's one possibility. One expression of a self-sufficiency is that he will go according to the way he thinks, even though there is some element of doubt, because he wants to be on his own. Another possibility, however, is that, on the contrary, he's a very cautious individual, and he won't say paskin anything if there's any element of doubt. But then what will the result be? Then the result will be that he'll have many svekas. The result will be he'll have many svekas. But many times a person would rather tolerate svekas and have his independence than have to go and be nichna to his Rebbe, to subordinate himself to his Rebbe. So therefore, there's two avenues of approach that are possible for the person to take. Either he will take the approach that he'll tolerate the svekas, and still maintain his independence, or else he'll paskin without consulting. Either way is bad. So really, both pshatim are actually two sides of one coin. There are two expressions of independence. Asei lecha rav estalik min ha-sofik. So that's what Rashi has two possibilities. Either it means estalik min ha-sofik means that you should, that is speaking about a really, a very strict investigator, who will be very precise, and the stock masafik means get rid of those svekas, because the svekas are bad. So the svekas are bad for the limud, because to have a lot of svekas really corrupts the whole limud, because your mind can't really fasten itself on any idea securely, so it ruins your association with Talmud Torah. Or it's speaking about a stalag masafik means, it's not talking about a person like that, it's talking about a person who's liable to draw conclusions that in which there is an element of doubt. Either way is wrong. Either way is wrong. That's the two pshatim arash. So you should remove the sfekis. Speaking about a strict investigator, it means you should remove the element of doubt from your psak. One of the two. Okay. As Rashi knows, has to do with the Rebbe. Sides of one coin. These are both pshatim. Because there's one of two possibilities when you don't have the when you're missing the fact. Okay. Rashi. Next Rashi. The one that's in brackets. V'stalik min asafik shelo yiyeh b'yisoda yisodos v'yidias hasodos safek b'libcho Ela vadai should be definite, the yadua and known ba'ayin halev, with the eye of the heart. Means the eye of the mind. Ki hua ikar. What does Rashi mean? What? Rashi says the principle of the principles. You can see that they learn the conceptual approach. The way they learned was, first they organized the basic principles, and then there's one unifying principle that unifies all those principles. It's theoretical conceptual learning. Shelo yiyeh b'yesod ha-yesodos. The yediyas ha-sodos. Okay? Suffolk b'livcho. Elavada if you do ben left. Rashi is telling you one thing. Rashi, according to Rashi, has to do with limud. See, the Rambam says right away, lo linyan limud. And Rabbeinu Yonah also learns the way. Rashi learns pshat that this memra has to do with limud. So according to him, estalik min asafik means that a person, that there's a certain relationship that a person has to Talmud Torah. A person has a certain relationship, and the whole purpose of an individual's life is to strengthen the bond of that relationship to Torah. That's the whole purpose of his existence. See? And if a person has doubts with regard to limud, if there's every doubt that he has removes him from this bond. That's what Rashi says. See? The bond can only be strong if he could fasten his mind's eye onto something. That's definite, that's concrete, that he really sees, he really feels he knows. As long as there's doubts, it destroys the very relationship of Talmud Torah. His very relationship to knowledge, his relationship to Torah. That if a person has learned through a sugya, and he's come down to the, he really sees the concept, and he sees it securely, this person's relationship to knowledge is of a different nature than a person who doesn't know, has doubts about what it is. Even though he might have the same concept. But let's say one individual knows it might be concept A or concept B. He sees the concept, and another person has outruled concept B. It's not just a matter of a gain in knowledge. Of course, a person that doesn't have a person that has more knowledge, you tell me, certainly is in a better position. But that's not what Rashi's emphasizing. Rashi shelo yiyeh b'yisoda yisodas v'yidiyas yisodas sofik b'lipcho ela vaday v'yadua b'ayin alef yu'ikah. It's a certain relationship. What Rashi's telling you over here is it's more than just a knowledge that we're discussing over here. See, the Pirkei Avos is not discussing the knowledge, the idea of knowledge insofar as knowledge is concerned per se. Naturally, I mean, knowledge is a very good thing. But the whole idea of Pirkei Avos is the perfection that a person attains from knowledge. And what the memory is saying, according to Rashi, is that the perfection that is attained through knowledge is the relationship that the individual has to that knowledge. Sveikis break the relationship. When a person has doubts, there is no security in the knowledge itself. The relationship is broken. So it's not just a matter of... Of course, in Mitzvah's Talmud Torah, a person that has more knowledge is better. Yeah, but it's more than that. That's not what Pirkei Avos is interested in. That's a double question, I'll say. That's a double question. That Talmud Torah, you have more knowledge. But Pirkei Avos is trying to show you that it's more than just more knowledge. But what he's demonstrating is your relationship to that knowledge. How does the person relate to the knowledge? When the person knows that there's no fraction of a doubt in his mind, then his soul partakes of knowledge to a greater degree. Because the mind of the eye of the soul can see it and grasp it, and it becomes a part of it to a greater degree. That's what Rashi is saying. It's a different concept, not just a concept. Of course, Rashi didn't have to say that. It's not very simple that anybody, the more knowledge you have, the better off you are. So you need so you should be mistalik menasafik. What he's telling you over here is in terms of perfection. Pirkei Avos is in terms of perfection. So to remove sveikis is a matter, not just a matter of gaining knowledge, it's a matter of perfection. Because the relationship that the individual has to knowledge itself is the bond is strengthened, so that his soul partakes of knowledge to a higher degree. That's what Rashi said. That's the benefit. Okay. Let's say two people learned Torah. Okay. One person learned, and he wasn't successful in finding a derech and learning where he really has security in the knowledge of his learning. So another person did. It's not just a gain in the knowledge per se. Not just a gain that he could paskin shaylos better, the one that has more knowledge. The relationship between him and chachma is a different one. Sveikis break that relationship. Sofik breaks the relationship. So more than just, you can't say, says more than just the lack of knowledge, the lack of the relationship. Because when the mind's eye doesn't see it clearly, there's doubts about it, it turns away from the knowledge. It's not just that it's lacking the knowledge, but there's something that, as long as the mind's eye doesn't see it clearly, you see, there's a disruption in the relationship. In the relationship to knowledge itself. The question is why it is so that this relationship is strengthened by definite knowledge. So why is definite knowledge? It's true that when you have definite knowledge, it strengthens your conviction in knowledge per se. You see, and somebody mentioned the system also, but I think there's something else also. There's something else. Another reason why, because you see, the soul has a desire. The desire of the soul is really to find out ultimately. The eye of the Rashi talks about the eye in the halev. The eye of the mind wants to view, is after a certain view. See? That view is the absolute concept that's behind everything. That's what it's striving for. The soul is striving for that concept. Now, as long as you don't arrive at that concept, there's a frustration. And the frustration really is a factor that breaks the relationship to knowledge. See? When the soul really achieves what it was after, which was to really gain, you see, the mind keeps trying to work it out. Let's say you have two sides, the mind will still keep trying. See? Now, as long as the mind didn't reach its goal, so there's a frustration in relationship to the knowledge. But when it reaches its goal and it discovers what the real idea is, what the true concept is, then there's a certain satisfaction. When there's a satisfaction, then the knowledge is really combines with it. Whereas frustration, it doesn't. It's more than just the conviction. I think it's the nature, you know, as the soul has not reached the same goal, as long as there's a sveikis there. And if it didn't reach the same goal, it's not satisfied. If it's not satisfied with it, then it can't fully partake of it. The question that we always say that the soul should enjoy knowledge, even if you don't know anything, even just to enjoy a question, it's also knowledge. There should be a certain enjoyment in that too. That's true. Every step of knowledge is enjoyable, and a question is an enjoyable experience also, because the mind has something to work with, to attach itself to. True, but you still cannot deny the ultimate quest of the mind. That's not to say just because the mind enjoys a question, and even in a question is a gain of knowledge, because a question means that you remove a possibility, which is an enjoyment of the gain of knowledge. That's true. But you still can't deny that the mind has an ultimate goal that it travels towards. And wherever you can satisfy that goal, wherever it's possible to satisfy, a person should do everything in his power to do it. We're not speaking of frustration in terms of a emotional frustration. We're just saying that the mind has not reached its conclusion. Yeah. It's still in process. It's still in process, so it's after something. That's good, right? So Rabbi brings right. It says it shouldn't be in the Yisodei Yisodos and the Yedias Yisodos suffering belief. How could it be a suffering in the... What does it mean by suffering in the Yedias Yisodos? I mean, if your Rebbe told you this is the Sod, then that's it. Okay? But he's not referring to the... He's not referring to the conclusion of the Sod. What he's referring to is the understanding of the Sod. So Yisodei the Yedias Yisodos in the knowledge of the Sod. So if there's any, once there's an element of doubt, in terms of understanding it, the whole area becomes doubtful to the mind. And the mind then relates in a certain method to the whole body of knowledge. Relationship to knowledge that we're discussing here. The relationship to knowledge. Okay. In other words, right. There's a difference between the Rambam. You won't find the Sveikas in the Rambam that many. I mean, a few, very rarely. Rishonim, you don't find these Sveikas. You see, Rishonim usually come to conclusions, and once in a while they have a Sveikas. And later, of course, the Achronim, you see, they don't know. It's like the Rambam and the Rashi, the Tosfos. So there's a lot of Sveikas. And Shulchan Aruch is based on a lot of Sveikas. There is no doubt that because of that situation, we are lacking in our relationship to Torah. No doubt about it. That's right. So you can't help it though. I mean, what are we going to do? But we're lacking. The fact is we're lacking. The fact is we have to know that we are lacking. It's not just we're lacking in the knowledge, but it really affects the very relationship to Allah itself. It affects that very relationship. If we would have the security, it wouldn't just be gaining knowledge, it would be gaining a relationship to Torah.
Why don't we take one?
Rabbi answers like this. Rabbi Gamliel Omar, say l'cho rav istalik min ha-sofik. Says Ratzalomar, he says something very astonishing. Sheyakabel chavero l'rav, just like he said before, say l'charav, you should accept him as a rav. Afalpi shelo yechacham yosem menu, even though he's not wiser than he is. Vafilu im lo hisigel chachmaso, even if this person who he's accepting as a rav did not reach his level, he's not as knowledgeable as he is. Kadeshi is stalik manasofik, in order that he should remove himself from the sofik. Sounds very strange, huh?
In other words,
Ubi Yerushalmi Omer. And the Yerushalmi it says, Zil Isili Zokim and Ashuk, the Ismachalai, go bring me a Zokim and Ashuk that I should rely on him, bring him in, sit him down, and rely on him. Va'ashri Lach, and I'll tell him, and I'll make it Mata for you. I can't say it's Mata. But bring in this fellow from the street, we'll ask him what he says, we'll rely on him, and it'll be Mata. Assuming he's going to say it's Mata. All right. Okay, that's the same. Assuming he's going to say his mother. That's the same same memory that the Rambam quotes. He said, "Well, yes." What? Then he says, "Chacham yistapek b'hara." Many times the chacham will be in doubt when it comes to pesach. Ve'ini yadeya. This is a mistake over here. Ve'ini yadeya ma lomar should be. What do you have? Im yatir. And then there's a vav that should be removed also. And yatir shem ha'wasser. V'tara takol al yada. See? And, what? V'tara takol al yada. And then, you'll have a stumbling block will occur. In other words, a mechshel will occur. Why? Because he'll pass in the wrong way. Right? May he'll pass in his mutter, and really it's also. So the person did say something is also. Then yes, I'm mutter. And let's say he'll say that something that's mutter go l'chomer, he'll say it's aser, right? Nimtzim mafshim b'mona shol Yisrael, b'ater achasala. So come out, you're destroying the money of Jewish money. You tell a person it's chickens and not kosher, he has to throw it out. So you're destroying b'mona shol Yisrael. You have no right to do that. Can't be machmer. So either way, you're stuck. Either way, you're stuck. You have to. In halacha, there's a specific line. You can't. There's no. Rich, you don't have any area to work with. I mean, it has to be specific. If you're wrong either way, it's no good. Situation. Somebody asks you a question about a product. Is this product kosher or trafe? So you tell them, well, look, it doesn't have the OU on it, so it's trafe. I mean, if you don't really know the facts with regard to Psak and Halacha, and you don't know your day and what the shadows might be, and you have to paskin, so you mabed me abed momish yisro. So you're not allowed to do it. Okay? Alkein yasa. So what should you do because of the situation? So the Rabbanian says there's an eitzah for him. Alkein yasa chavera rav. He should make his chaver into a rebbe. V'yishol mimenos fekosav. And ask him his doubts. V'yasa haro al piv. And he should do according to what he says. V'afilu imadavar upashadevav. V'afilu leheter. Even though he's not as intelligent as he is. That's the way out of this dilemma. In other words, I don't want to assume the responsibility and paskin according to my own good judgment, so I take somebody that's less knowledgeable, I rely on him, let him get the punishment for paskin the wrong way. Why should I have anything to do with it? Less knowledgeable than him. You can't even throw the burden to him. Because, I mean, you're following what he said. So you're better off using your own mind. It says, V'chein amur ha-gainim zal. It goes on further. And the gainim said, this is what the gainim said. Kol hecha de lamar mesaf delay, wherever according to one person's a suffix. Or lamar pshit delay. Another person is convinced simply that this is the way it is. Question of halacha. Hilchas command the pashut life. The halacha is according to the one that holds simply and conclusively that this is the way it is, without any doubts. V'afilu talmid lefnei rav, and even a talmid that's sitting in front of his rebbe, and the rebbe is in doubt as to which way to go, and the talmid says, "No, I'm sure it's this way." So he followed the talmid, passed like the talmid. Wow. It makes matters a little worse, not better. Why do you have there are Sveikas and Rishonim? Why did that Sveikas? Just grab a hold of some fool and let him pass him. This concept, Sock, is a very arbitrary type of thing. And what is the what? Yeah, it's definite. Correct. It's definitely speaking about a person that's not a fool. Speaking about a person that's a tomahawk. But even though he has less knowledge than you. Okay, that's true. And it does not necessarily mean that this person that you call in is going to definitely paskin this guy. He didn't mean my email.
He
may not paskin at all. That's right. It's the halacha of Talmud and Bifnei Rav. Let's understand that halacha. The Talmud says Vaday that it's this way, and the Rav is Mesupik. The Rav is a greater intellect. And the Rav is Mesupik. Halacha is we paskin like the Talmud. Why is that so? This already isn't so difficult. Why is the halacha like a Talmud makam Rav, even though the Rav is Mesupik and the Talmud says Vaday, so you follow the Talmud? That's not so difficult. Why? Because we have other halachas like that. You have, for instance, Achrei Rabim Lahatos. And you go by the majority, even though one chacham on the bezin could be much more intelligent than you can't take 50 minds and put them together, and 50 minds are not going to be more intelligent than one more intelligent mind. You can't take minds and just condense them together to create a greater mind. It doesn't work that way. So why do you pass them like the rabbin? So the answer is because there's a system of halacha, a system of halacha. Theory? Yeah, this Yachid is a great theoretician. He's probably right, could be right. But halacha has to have objective means of determining what the action is going to be. When you sit down and learn the sugi, so you can agree with the chacham. But when you're paskin, the psak has to be determined objectively. And Rov is an objective system. The same thing the Gemara says. The Gemara says, why didn't they paskin like Rav Meir? Because shelo yardu l'sof daito. So Rav Meir was so abstract that they couldn't really, the Chachamim argue with him, they couldn't grasp his abstractions. That's how deep he was. He says, that's why we didn't paskin like him, Gemara says. Why Nishla Yodl Savdaita? He was too abstract. What does it mean? Yeah, he was very abstract. Wonderful. Greatest theoretician. But Psak, you can't base Psak on that. Psak, we have to see what we're doing in front of us, and we have to be able to come to a decision. That's all. Man's very abstract. We can't grasp as a... Can't be Yodl Savdaita. We can't say we're passing on him for that reason. I mean, we're passing him blindly. Psak has to have a system. So astonishing when you say that the halacha is like a Talmud Makom Rav. For the simple reason, like Richard said, because the halachic system, in order to create psak, there are certain criteria that we have to meet. And one of those criteria is that we have to have a certitude. There has to be certitude. Now, a person who is a great theoretician, but he's in the grips of a theoretical debate which he can't solve, so this man has removed himself from the area of psak. So he's out. Now we see there's another Talmud Chacham. Could be it's his Talmud. There's another Talmud Chacham, and he says that this is the way it is. We're paskin like him. Psak can't tolerate the Sveikus. See? Theory, wonderful. But Psak has to have a system. So this man is lost in theory. He's in a bind. He doesn't know which way to go. Very nice. Talmud Torah is wonderful. But Psak, he's removed himself from the area of Psak. Now the Talmud is present. Talmud says, you're passing this way. We follow the Talmud. That's halacha. Because halacha cannot tolerate sakes. Okay? Simple advice. You always rely on somebody, and that's it. And what's the, you mean this is just telling you psak then? What's the whole thing over here? I say, look, whoever's talking about suffering. What is he saying to you? Cut rule and psak, and what's the say, look, whoever's talking about suffering? That's the way we're paskin. Tefillah, the halacha is that Talmud makam a rav, and Talmud's vada, and rav is suffering, so pasan a Talmud. Makes sense when you understand what the halacha structure is. What's it got to do with an ethical statement of I say, look, whoever's talking about suffering? Yeah. The Rav do. The Talmud says definitely this way. The Rav is in doubt. What does the Rav do? The Rav still has a doubt. The Rav is a suffix. The Rav is a suffix. See, it's an interesting thing. We paskin like the Talmud, but the Rav himself still remains in doubt. Why is that so? Because the answer is like this. How is that so? Sounds strange. The Rav remains in suffix, and we paskin like the Talmud. Why is the Rav stuck in suffix? The answer is because in halacha is determined by your mind. Halacha is determined by your mind. Halacha is a natural outgrowth of mind. So if your mind is in doubt as to which way to go, that's it. You're stuck. You're stuck. You can't move. For you, it's a suffer. Now later, when somebody else who doesn't know the sugya sees a machlekes of Talmud and Rav, and the Rav is in a suffix. So then the halacha says that for him, he follows the Talmud, because the Rav has removed himself. The Rav has removed himself from a. Is not a barach yet psak over here. You see, but however, the Rav himself, insofar as he's concerned, didn't remove himself, because he really is pondering the issue. So he really remains a suffix. You understand what I mean? But the outside person, he follows the Talmud. Right? Why does he have a right to follow the Talmud? Because the halacha is such, since he doesn't know the area and he's looking for authority, he's paskining on the base of authority. On the base of authority, if an individual reaches a dead end, so then he's not a, we don't accept him as an authority. His authority, his strength as an authority is lost. So therefore you follow the Talmud. Because the Talmud maintains conviction that this is the way it is. He has a psak. The first authority has removed himself. Even though he's a greater person, but he's removed himself. But now this lower authority didn't remove himself. He remains. He paskins. We follow him. You see? That's for an outsider who's paskining on the basis of what? Of authority. But the Rav himself, who's involved in the grips of the suffix, he's not paskining on authority. He's paskining on knowledge, direct knowledge of the area. And when he reaches direct knowledge of the area, he reaches a standstill, because he comes across two theories and he can't decide which one's right. He can't say, now I'm going to paskin on authority. You can't paskin on authority when you know the area. If you know the area, that's it. You have to paskin according to your knowledge. That's like the Rush. The Rush says that he never used to make two brachas on tefillin because he was in doubt. So brachas lahakel. He says, but I want to learn menachas. He saw there were many gedolim paskin this way, paskin that way. So he was in doubt. He says, but I want to learn menachas. I saw that it makes sense. These two brachas make sense. Then I started to make two brachas. See, before he had knowledge of the area, he paskin on the basis of authority. But once he had knowledge, he can't paskin on authority. Authority is only a secondary form of knowledge. See, so you may be fortunate sometimes to be ignorant, in a sense, right? I mean, in terms of psak, you know. Of course, in reality, it's not so. But in terms of psak, you're in a better position to decide. Since you're deciding based on authority, so therefore you follow definite authority, because an authority that's not definite is not considered an authority. It's removed himself. But the authority himself can't do this, because he's poskening on the basis of knowledge, direct knowledge. And direct knowledge, you can't do a standstill. He has a suffix. You see? Okay, that's why they say that Reb Chaim used to ask Reb Yitzchok Chana for a psak. Give me a psak in the area. He used to say, but please do not tell me your reasons. That's it. Don't tell me the reasons. Why? Because once it's not telling the reasons, he's going to start analyzing going into the area. Now he's going to have to decide on the basis of knowledge. He's going to come to the different conclusions. Asfakas, forget it. He's finished. If he comes to Asfakas, he's finished. But he says, don't tell me your reasons. You're a reliable authority, you see? And you say that's the psak. I have a right to rely on you. That's the psak. I go by what you said. That's it. But I'm poskening our authority. That's the way the halachic system works. That's a part of the system. Okay? Now, demanding in terms of performance also. If the person has an intellectual interest in an area, he can't say, I'm not going to learn the area. That would be ridiculous. But Reb Chaim was not interested intellectually in that area. His inquisitiveness was carrying to other areas. But now Psak came up, and Psak demands that you have to have a way of doing things. So that's why he told Rabbi Kochan, he says, give me the Psak. But don't tell me why. You tell me why. Reasons, I'm going to start going already. Start doubting the reasons. Then I'm going to have to get involved. I have to poskin on the basis of primary knowledge. Then I don't want to get involved in that. Because it's not... Reb Chaim, they used to say, had a hard time poskining Shabbos. Because he used to go, he used to see different sides. He was too great a theoretician to ever come to the practical conclusion. Many times he wouldn't come to the practical conclusion. Great theoretical mind, and he always saw new theories. So that's why he told Rabbi Yitzchok Chana and Paskin, that's it. You understand? Okay. But what is the question is, so what is the advice of the Aseh Lecha Rav Estalak Manasafik? What is the advice, really? Aseh Lecha Rav Estalak Manasafik, what's the advice? What kind of advice? How do you put it in terms of advice? What does it mean? I mean, so far we're dealing with facts and suck. We understand it. But what kind of advice can you give in this area? Like this. That really halacha demands. Halacha demands a tremendous confidence in a person's knowledge. Halacha. Because halacha demands that the person has to be able to sit down, go through the sugya, gives them rights to come to certain conclusions and to follow, once it comes to that conclusion, to follow what to do. That's it. Right? So on the one hand, it demands a tremendous amount of confidence in one's intellectual ability. So there's a certain amount of self-reliance. Halacha. Okay? On the other hand, however, that being the case, a person would not rely on someone that is less of a chacham than him. That is less of a chacham than him. He has to rely on his own knowledge. Now, what Pirkei Avos is saying like this, it's saying that there is a phenomenon that even a great chacham sometimes can be in a situation where he's come to a standstill. So he comes to a standstill, but he could still respect another person's intuition. It's possible. There are situations like that where a person can, even though he's a great chacham, he can have respect for an individual's intuition in a specific area, let us say, or at a certain time, specific things, even though he knows that generally speaking he's a greater chacham than this other individual. He respects this person's intuition.